Welcome to episode 2 of the Dark Star Astrology podcast. In the background, you can hear, as well as an aeroplane, is Mercury by Holst. He features in the lunar eclipse this month, but also with Mars. But I thought I'd pick Mercury because I think he probably does sum up really what's been going on with the sort of medical influence that we get from the star that the moon is on. After that, we'll be looking at Jamie's June forecast for the last 2 weeks of June. And after that, we'll just have a look what we've got on the first page, or the front page of our blog this week. We have a very exciting post about the Kundalini Awakening, which I found to feature Uranus and the Lilith Corridor. So I'll talk a little bit about that. And also the other post, we have a really great discussion on the Pluto square Sun transit, which is affecting all those who are born in the signs of Aries or Libra. That's between actually 3 and 10 degrees of those signs. And that will be transiting from now till 2013, so that's quite a big deal for those of you in those signs. So we'll talk about that later. But first of all, we shall look at the lunar eclipse. Now, I named this one Kill or Cure because of the fixed star that the moon is on. It's actually at 24 degrees Sagittarius, this lunar eclipse, and it's on June the 15th. And it's on the fixed star Lezath, which is the stinger on the tail of the scorpion. So fixed stars wise is actually in the constellation of Scorpio. Right, so the lunar nodes are also important in this eclipse because the north node is still on Ras al-Hugu in Ophiuchus. So the most relevant aspect to this eclipse as well is the Mars sextile Ceres, which both plug into the moon, and the Sun is making a square, and this makes an aspect pattern known as the provocative. Now, in a natal chart, this would be somebody who takes upon himself to bring things out in the open that would otherwise remain in hiding. So it's a bit of a whistleblower. Attack is the best form of defence with this pattern in the sky, and as it involves Mars, which is war, and food resources, Ceres, we should see some hard bargaining in the world marketplace. And now the lunar eclipse being on Lesath, the stinger in the scorpion, which is in quincunx to Mars on Algol as well. Now, we know Algol is the head of Medusa and quite fearsome as well. So that is quite a big deal, really, and makes this very intense. So I don't think this is going to be a very peaceful 6 months at all. Lezath is of the nature of Mercury and Mars, and it does give danger, desperation, immorality and malevolence, and it is connected with acid poisons as well. So we have a piercing intellect and an acid tongue then with this setup. And there's even a semi-sextile from Mars to Mercury to make things even more cutting. So stinging words in the media, someone's going to be taking their revenge and spinning their story, and their telltales will actually have quite a devastating effect. So, well, there might be a few, yeah, kiss and tell stories and whistleblowing. So we'll see what happens in the next month or so with that. We've already really had a lot of this energy already, so I do think the energy does kind of happen a little bit before the eclipse as well. And they're supposed to last for 6 months too, but it depends. Some eclipses are stronger than others, so we'll see what really happens with this one. Now, Mars on Algol, I'm not overly keen on the fact that it's on a star that means piled up corpses, but to keep it positive, I didn't find anyone too fearsome with Mars on Algol in my research. You can see my research on the website. So, following Jamie's idea about Mars, of Algol, we could be talking about some revelations about the human genome or revealing something that's been hidden. Mars with Mercury I've said is splicing, medical procedures, genetic manipulation. And remember also that Medusa's blood can heal or poison. So if this sharp intellect is ignited, maybe we will have some scientific breakthroughs in the next 6 months, or even a medical cure. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be just death and destruction and nasty things. It could actually be the cure rather than the kill. So let's hope it's going to be that. Now, the North Node is still transiting over Ra's al Hagu, the medicine man. So that fits with the general theme. And Ra's al Hagu is also the shaman. So this could be either prescribed or street drugs. Ceres is square the moon, so this talks of controversy over what we put into our bodies, herbs and vitamins v prescription drugs, or even a war on drugs, this could be, because the square is a Marsy aspect. This could be about wanting to ban patients from treating themselves somehow. And after I wrote this, I heard a podcast on Red Ice Radio, and they were talking about there's going to be tougher restrictions on selling herbs. So what are they going to do? Start banning flowers now? And dandelion? I don't know, but we'll see what happens with that. But it's sad. They're sort of doing the Algol thing on us, really, which is removing the head from the body and further removing power from the herbalist to prescribe for people, really. We have to rely on the medical profession, and although the medical profession is, you know, admirable, it's not always the best way to treat people. So that's just my view anyway. As I said in the Algol post, Algol can be about castrating personal power and letting the gods, as in doctors, decide what's best for the patient. And it also describes the process of losing touch with what our bodies are telling us and fearing the consequences if we don't go to the so-called expert. So, yes. Now, this whole moon really is saying, on a personal level now, it's all about getting in touch with our bodies, listening to them, not always trying to mask the pain. And we could decide to look at our diet and nutrition, and this would be an ideal time to do it with this eclipse. Mars sextile Ceres is great for cutting out what's fattening and unhealthy empty calories, and of course with Lesath the stinger, it's also asking what's your poison. And Algol Mars, well, we've already discussed its association with the demon alcohol. Talking of which, another manifestation of this could be alcohol-fueled violence. Well, we're coming up to summertime in the Northern Hemisphere, so this is really the season of the refreshing outdoor pint and sweaty guys watching pub football, so I'd keep clear of drunkards during this eclipse. The only asteroid of note conjunct the moon is Eudora, which is a rain nymph. And she's one of the seven sisters that comprise the stormy Hades, which is in constellation Taurus. So the wine theme continues, because they were known for nursing the wine god Dionysus. And they can also mean floods of tears. We could be having quite a passionate, ultra-emotional and even vengeful moon here. So the card I picked for this eclipse was the Four of Pentacles. And in this deck, it's in the constellation Orion. Now, this great hunter was stung to death by a scorpion. So there we go. Moon on Lesath again. And he got stung by the scorpion because he was an arrogant git and thought that he was above nature. So the revenge was taken on him by a mere scorpion and stung him in the foot. Like Algol's monstrous creations, there is an arrogance in thinking one can cheat nature somehow with this card as well. And also, the pentacles are about resources, which is Ceres, so that fits in as well. So this card questions how much man should control nature. Now, in relationships, this lunar eclipse will be about letting things take their natural course and not trying to manipulate things too much. And the temptation for revenge is quite high. We should try and hold back before lashing out, and you might find out that the universe will take care of things for you anyway. So there's no need for overkill. I just think with all the energies with this moon, ramming things home could actually backfire. So there's two main themes going on, really. There's the poisonous tongue, as in whistleblowing as well, scandalous revenge in the media. And then, of course, we've had the awful food scare in Germany that's spread around Europe. And that was caused by the E. coli that we don't know where it even came from. I think in the end they found it was in bean sprouts. So that was ironic because it was people trying to be healthy and eating salads. And then those salads were lethal to some people. So again, this makes us wonder about what we're doing to create these superbugs, which is the overuse of antibiotics. And are the medical profession that wise if they're handing them out like sweets and causing these superbugs to be even more dangerous than otherwise would be? So we need to really know how to keep our gut healthy by natural means rather than wiping out everything with antibiotics. And we're still dealing with the aftermath of Fukushima, the earthquake and the meltdown of the nuclear reactors. How's that affecting the food chain? Because fishes, you know, the rain that pours down on the vegetables afterwards with the radiation, you know, what is there left to eat? I mean, really, the whistleblowing could be revealing the sheer extent to how much of our food supply is just poisoned. So we might have to resort to growing our own in greenhouses so that the rain doesn't fall on it, or growing it indoors with hydroponics is another thing. So we'll see what happens in the next 6 months. There's going to have to be a severe review over what we're eating. And it's just funny that this E. coli scare has come up as well, just to sort of flag it up. You know, what are we eating? What are we putting into our bodies? Right. Well, that's not very cheery, is it? Okay, well, but there is one positive that has come out of it, and that is that Italy, Germany, Malaysia, Thailand and Switzerland have made the decision to stop using nuclear energy, as what Michelin said in a comment on the Fukushima post. So that's something. Now, I'm going to look at Jamie's forecast for the second 2 weeks of June, but what I'm going to do is sort of put it in with this look at the celestial skies, so we can sort of incorporate a bit of astronomy with a bit of astrology and see how that works out. But before I do that, probably best to explain just how we work at Dark Star Astrology. We do, if you've noticed in our blog, use the fixed stars to extreme extent. This is because we don't really use the tropical zodiac for anything more than coordinates, which means that Sun in Aquarius doesn't mean that much to us, apart from sort of where the Sun is roughly to describe where it is in the sky. Sun at 2 Aquarius, it will give it a position. So when we do our horoscopes, we're really looking at aspects, not the Sun in the solar houses, which is how the daily horoscope writers do it. We do it by decans and aspects, so you'll see how that works on our website. So bearing that in mind, that's how we do our horoscopes. So when we're doing charts is another thing. We look at your fixed stars and we look at the constellations that your planets fall into. But they're still going to be different from the sidereal, because the sidereal zodiac, which is what the Vedics use, is, again, just really the tropical zodiac divided into 12 and shifted back 24 degrees to account for precession. But what we do really is we look at what it looks like in the sky, really, and just take in account of what constellations are near each other and the whole picture of the constellations in the sky, because there's a story going on up there, and you'll see that there's Perseus on top of the bull, that it's like a bullfighter, and you'll see that there are some really strange constellations out there, like the peacock and Triangulum. There's all bits and pieces, they're not just the ones on the ecliptic, though the ecliptic ones are the most important, because obviously the stars on in those constellations are going to be nearer to the planets on the ecliptic as they transit. So when the sun is on Regulus, it really is going to be on Regulus because it's so near. But then we're getting into declinations here, so I don't want to get too complex, but that's really why the zodiac constellations are the ones that are the most important, because they're on the ecliptic, which is the path of the sun as it goes round, or appears to go around, the Earth. But it doesn't mean that the others don't have an effect, but you have to bear that in mind, that they are further away. And we know that Pluto has a damn strong effect on us, even though it's miles away. Now, it's always, always good to get out and start looking at the sky and getting an astronomy book and seeing where everything is, because I think the planets and the constellations speak to you when you're actually looking at them, and you can sort of get your bearings a bit. And that's really how the ancients started to prophesy with the stars, because they sat there and actually looked at them. And somehow, I just don't know how they did it, but they figured out that certain things, aspects in the sky, corresponded with death of kings or kings losing in battle, and how the constellations became the myths and how they were constructed in the way that they are, and how it works is just a, one of the, you know, it's just a mystery. But it does work, it appears to work, so I'm not going to argue with that. Now, people like me who live in a city, it's just very difficult to go out, and you'd have to be very dedicated to sit out there as an astrologer in the freezing cold with your binoculars trying to look through the haze of pollution and root out the stars and the planets. So luckily for us, with wonderful technology, if we can't do that every night, always good to go out and look at the stars. But if you can't do that every night, what's really lovely is a program which is called Stellarium, and it's free off the internet. So download that and you can have fun traveling around the ecliptic and seeing exactly where everything is. And it's wonderful because you've got all the stars up there in their constellations. You'll get to see where all the funny little ones are, like Triangulum and Telescope and Peacock. And there's a story up there in the heavens for you to learn from, and to inspire your own intuition to tell you, well, your higher self to guide you, really. As they say, may the stars guide your way, and they guided the sailors, but they also guide us psychologically too, once we start interacting with them. And even if it's on a, you know, computer screen, it's better than nothing. So there you go. So, looking at Stellarium now, today it's lovely to see that the Sun and Mercury together in conjunction. Now, this conjunction is exact tomorrow on the 12th, and what Jamie said about it was that it does highlight all communications, and it's a very busy time because of the position of where they are. Now, physically in the sky, if you look at them, they're banging between the two horns of Taurus, but they're also in line with a few major stars. One of them, Bellatrix, the Warrior Queen. Another one is Capella in the Mother Goat in the Charioteer, and that's sort of like multitasking there. And also Fact in the Dove, which Jamie says is a bringer of good news, hopefulness and good fortune. So that's a nice hopeful attitude just before we get quite a difficult lunar eclipse. Now, the meaning for the star on the bull horns is violence, male violence, aptitude for military enterprise and stratagems, but danger of deceit and ambushes, which sort of goes with the theme that I set in the full moon as well. But in the tropical zodiac, let's go back to the horoscope, they're in Gemini. Anyway, I won't start griping on about tropical astrology just yet, because of course it's been valuable and it did pin down things and stop everything from flying around in a sort of chaos. So the sun, and the sun does that, that's what the sun does, it's logical. The ecliptic is about logic and logos, so we want things to be organised as well. So what else have we got? What else is happening in the sky? Saturn, which is really represents authorities and bosses and fathers, well, he's on Porrima, which is in the constellation of Virgo, and Virgo's a huge constellation, but Porrima's one of the ones nearest the ecliptic, and Saturn is, because Saturn is not really on the ecliptic, he's a bit higher up. He's right on Porrima right now, I mean, bang on, so that's going to have a really strong influence, I would say. Now, Porrima is quite a prophetic star. According to Robson, it's courteous, refined and a lovable character as well. So, I think bosses generally in the next couple of weeks hopefully will be affected by the nice Porrima influence. Although, you see, with Saturn, it kind of gives a little bit of problems because it is intelligent and studious with Saturn, of course, but there's also evil environment, whatever that means. Now, this is the definition for if you have this natally, but if we sort of use this to kind of see what it would mean in the mundane world, it says evil environment, domestic disharmony, sickly children and homes broken up. So, I mean, this could be another effect of it, which is sort of goes against its lovable character, which is, you know, how does this work as a mundane influence? So, I mean, there's two sides to it. I think what it could even mean is a sort of certain naivety and... when you are someone who has got prophetic instincts, people don't trust you. So this suffering from conspiracy of friends and relatives could be just people ganging up on something that they find a little bit scary because it's someone who knows the future, and people that know the future are always distrusted by the general authorities, really, and patriarchy, I guess. So that is probably the influence of Porrima in the next few weeks is going to be, and it sort of goes with the moon as well, of this people doing the old whistleblowing and people sort of spilling the beans who maybe the authorities want to gag, really, and stop them being rocking the boat. And same with this sort of thing with domestic disharmony as well. That also could be in the home, if any children are being abused in any way, they might want to speak out, but the father in the home or whoever is the dominant, the boss in there, is going to try and sort of keep them from speaking out. So that is another manifestation of Saturn on Porrima. Neptune is at 0° Pisces, is only just kind of got into Pisces, but is retrograding back into Aquarius. But its actual position is at the belly button of Aquarius in the sky. Aquarius and Neptune I just think the internet, because it's technology and it's also sort of everyone being as one, which is very Neptunian. And all the whistleblowing that's been going on the internet, you know, WikiLeaks. I mean, how Neptune in Aquarius is that? So to me, that's what it's saying to me anyway, in the sky, if you look at it. Oh, another thing though, if you zoom out and you can see that our Aquarian guy is standing on a fish, and in that fish is Fomalhaut, which is one of the royal stars of Persia. And this is a star that is noted for being strong in astrologers and occultists. It's a psychic star. It can also be very, very good or very, very bad, apparently, but it will give you a name to be remembered. Now, this star and many of the other ones that surround it, like Salisud, they all give psychic ability and ability to prophesize. And around this area, you've also got, above him, you've got the head of Pegasus and the head of the horse as well, Aquelius. So this is this is basically the area of the age of Aquarius. And it's exciting because it is very new agey when you consider all the sort of psychic influence and the high flying and far out ahead of its time thinking, really. So I think, you know, Neptune is taking on all these energies for quite some time. This is the time of the internet, really, the time of WikiLeaks. It's of its time right now. Uranus is at 4 Aries, and it's being conjunct Lilith. Lilith is moving away now, so she's kind of... But I think she's still influencing it. Judging just by the sort of things that we've been writing about on our site lately, what with Algol and also the Kundalini post. Now, Uranus is at 4 Aries, according to Tropical Zodiac, but... When you look at the sky, you'll see that Uranus is next to one of the fishes in Pisces, and the nearest star, really, I mean, it's being affected by Pegasus too, because this fish is just underneath Pegasus. So it's in that area. And Lilith at the moment is conjunct, or by 14 minutes, Alginib, which is in the wing of Pegasus. So it gives that kind of way out, ideas ahead of their time, rebellious and outside the box type of feeling. So this basically means if you are having a intense Uranus transit at the moment, it's going to be even more Uranian, because you've got Uranus being affected by Pegasus as well. So take that influence into account as well. And the fact that Lilith has been flying around on a broomstick near that winged horse as well. So yeah, so that is going to make if you're having a Kundalini experience at the moment, my God, it's going to be extra potent, I'm sure, because of the Lilith thing. And actually, Lilith is all about the Kundalini, as you will see when you read the post. Now, hold on to Kundalinis on June the 27th, when Mars sextiles that Uranus, and that sounded rude, didn't it? But it's going to set fire to it, as Mars does, and it's also, of course, the planet of sex. So it's also a really good time to make a new and exciting initiative and start. Also, maybe to start the old diet or health regime as well. Now, on this day also, Venus is on the good news star Fact in the Dove, so it should be some good love news. And also, there is a Sun trine Chiron, which is a healing influence, and this could be sexual healing as well, with all this sort of rude stuff going on with Mars and the Kundalini. So yeah, I think June the 27th is a good time to get in touch with your root chakra and rooting. Now, you Australians will know what I mean by that. On to Jupiter now. So Jupiter's just waltzed into Taurus, so all the Taurians are going to be rejoicing that they're going to get at some point Jupiter affecting their sun in the next year. And also, if you've got an ascendant Taurus as well, Jupiter in there can expand your waistline, so try not to indulge too much, because that's what will happen. It is lucky, but you also have to make it. You have to make the luck work. And it's also great for spiritual enlightenment and travel as well, so make the most of it while it's there. Of course, Jupiter was the philanderer of the gods, so with the sun being fired up by Jupiter, your libido will be on fire. So if you're going to seduce all those nymphs and disguise yourself as various animals, just do remember to practice safe sex. Jupiter in the sky is really just about to come to hit some of those really randy stars in Aries. Chariton and Hamal is a hugely highly sexed one, so that should be fun later on. But at the moment, Jupiter is conjunct Mirak in Andromeda, the Chained Princess. Now, Mirak is actually on the hip, or, well, they say the girdle, but I like to think it's on the hip, because those hips don't lie. Well, it's going to make Jupiter even more bouncy than usual and wiggling her hips around. She's broken free of her chains and she's doing the old belly dancing. So Jupiter's belly dancing right now. And if it's affecting you in your chart, if you've got anything it's squaring my sun. Anything in the fixed signs around the first couple of degrees, Jupiter will be doing something there. So if you're feeling a little bit jiggy at the moment, you'll know why. So yes, Jupiter's jumping about. And that brings us right back to Taurus on the ecliptic again, and that's where Mars and Venus are. Of course, Mars is, at the moment, it's conjunct Capulus, but it's on its way to the head of Medusa. So, yes, Mars is pretty passionate at the moment, and so is Jupiter. So we've got sort of heightened passions for the next 2 weeks, so make love, not war, as they say. So it's quite apt, I guess, that I have written this Kundalini Awakening post. I just felt compelled to write it. I read an amazing book by Barbara Hand Clow, The Liquid Light of Sex, and it's all about the half Uranus return, which is usually the time of our midlife crisis, and it's the peak time for the Kundalini awakening to occur naturally. So I had a feeling that, yeah, the Uranus was involved, and I read, halfway through that book. But also I wanted to sort of test for myself whether it had any bearings on Lilith and the Lilith corridor, the mean and the true Lilith. So I put a request out on Facebook and asked people who had Kundalini experiences to send me their birth data and when it happened. And I didn't really know too much about the Kundalini, to be honest. I just had the impression it was like you just get this huge kind of surging through your body and then that's it, you're kind of awakened. But it's not as simple as that. It can be a long process and it can be a very subtle process, I have found out too. And we've all felt, I've certainly changed in the last 4 years, and it can be sort of a 5-year process even. But in every single case that I looked at, there was transits to the Liliths, but all of them, as well as, and I found these to be indicators as well, Jupiter, Neptune, Uranus or Chiron transits to either the Sun, Mars or the nodes, or the progressed Moon. Uranus transits to personal planets, and a lot of 8th house action really, and the 12th house as well, which you would expect because it's a spiritual house. But it's sort of fire and water things going on. A lot of Mars, Neptune as well, which can be very tantric and very blissful. Then we have a Pluto square Sun transit post, which is, as I said, I think I said before, is affecting those with Libra and Aries suns. So if your birth date is between March the 24th and the 31st, or September the 26th to October the 4th, you'll be sharing this experience with Lady Gaga and Elton John. So we'll see what transformations they'll be making in their lives in the next year or so. Well, it's up to 2013, so interesting time for them. And 68 comments on that, so if you're going through this, come and join the discussion. And anyone with sun trine, Sarah's natally, I've written about that too. So, that brings us almost to the end. Just one thing, we're offering a new reading in our reading section because we've had a few requests, and this is a good way of doing a sort of custom reading if none of the other readings really suit what you need to know. So we've decided to do a question reading. With the eclipse season coming up, lots of people asking, how is this going to affect me? So the way to do that would just be to email us a question, go to the readings page, and you'll see the order button there. And it's $45 for either me or Jamie to answer that. So, yep, that's a new addition that we've added to the readings. Been listening to Dark Star Astrology Podcast. This is your host Marina Caruso, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks for episode 3. If you want to go to our website, the address is www.darkstarastrology.com. But until next time, here's Mercury to take us out. Bye bye.